everybody. Welcome to another edition of Guide to Financial Peace. This is No BS Money Guy Todd Strobel, and we have our resident expert and best-selling author, Kim Butler, with us again today. Hi, Kim.
Hello, Todd. I trust all is well.
All is fantastic. So yesterday we started a conversation about accredited investors, and just for a quick review, the SEC is the one who has created the term accredited investor, and basically they are, I suppose, if we look at it in a positive light, they're trying to say that there are classes of investments that a more sophisticated investor should be able to invest in that maybe the average person should not. And they're trying to define that as the person's net worth or their ability to earn income. So in this case, accredited investor is defined as a person or a couple who has a net worth in excess of $1 million, not including the value of their primary residence, or two of the last 3 years they've had to make more than $200,000 as an individual or $300,000 as a couple in order to qualify as an accredited investor. So yesterday we started talking about, you know, we really kind of dived into, you know, just because somebody has that money, does it necessarily mean that they should have access to those investments? And more importantly, if a person doesn't meet those guidelines, should they be denied access to those investments? And Kim, I'll just kind of let you summarize your thoughts on that, and then we'll kind of move into some deeper specifics.
Absolutely. Well, I believe that less government control is better, and so I do not think that anybody should be denied access to these investments. I love what you said. You know, we're trying to put it in a positive light because that's just the best way to get through life, is to try to always look at the positive things. But the fact is that I know I have many, many clients that would love to be involved in these accredited investments, but because they're not accredited investors, they can't. However, as we've talked about, that is slightly changing, and we have one accredited investment that we'll talk about today that actually allows for somebody to be what's known as a suitable investor. And the suitable investor's requirements are either, it has the same double tandem rule, I guess we would say, minimum of net worth of $150,000 and income of $100,000, or minimum net worth of $250,000. So suitable investors are already able to invest in some of our accredited investments. And so as the government continues to figure out that maybe they didn't quite go down the right road in this, and they open the doors a little bit to suitable investors and possibly even changing the definition of accredited investors, I think we'll see more and more people access accredited investments, which to me are an ideal environment when we can do so and not be at risk of losing our principal. And a lot of accredited investments are very risky, but some of them are very, very safe, and yet they still have good returns.
I would say that that is probably what has shocked me the most, is that although some of the paperwork is a little more complicated and you know, private offerings and things like that, I would say that on average, the safety or risk level has been less on a lot of the accredited investments that I've seen than on traditional investments that are available to everyone. I told you I was at a seminar this weekend or something, and one of the people that spoke, they provide $250,000 unsecured credit lines to brand new corporations, and a lot of these brand new corporations are being set up specifically to do Forex. So they're able to get $250,000 unsecured money and then leverage that at 200 to 300, possibly 500 or whatever it is to one. Or is it five? On Forex, it might be like 5,000 to one, isn't it?
It is, yeah, huge leverage.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's just unbelievable even though they're using new corporations, they're still requiring personal guarantees. So I believe 250,000, I'm trying to think of the numbers. It was like $20 million you could control with this Forex thing. And the odds of losing the entire $250,000 in like a 48-hour period was incredible.
Yeah.
And that's not
law.
You know, there's no accreditation required for that.
Exactly. Principal loss is actually one of the biggest risks out there, because when people lose principal, when they're investing their next deals, they try to make that back up, and it makes them more aggressive than they really should be and ends up potentially compounding the problem. So we always work really hard to get our clients in environments where they cannot lose principal.
Well, and most people would tell you that they are risk adverse, and risk is part of investing. And I think that most people really don't understand this, and that there are acceptable risks and unacceptable risks. Now, think of this. If you have your money in a certificate of depreciation, I mean certificate of deposit, in a bank, and they're paying you. Let's say that you're lucky and you're getting paid 1%. And you can argue that the lowest inflation rate being quoted right now is 3%, which is probably twice that. Are you or are you not at risk?
You're at huge risk, because you're purchasing power is being eroded.
So I would say that most people don't understand that that risk is built into the equation. I mean, even if you just dig a hole in the backyard, if we're still experiencing appreciation in price or depreciation in value of the money, either way you want to look at it, it's the same thing. You know, you also have the risk of not being able to find the hole, I guess. But you're still, when you uncover that asset, what it can buy is less than when you put it in the hole.
That's right. Yes, I think there's about 10 different definitions of risk. We should do a radio show on those sometime. I don't even know them all, but I could look them up. And this risk that you're talking about, this reduction of purchasing power, is huge.
Got it. So that's the thing, I guess, if we could get that point across and just realize that, okay, you know, if you have money, you have risk. So what is the saddest point to me is that if you put your money in a bank because you've been convinced that that is the safest way to avoid risk and you're getting the low rate of return, if you could turn around and go to the investments that the bank is making, they're making the same investments with your money that you were told not to do. It's crazy.
So the money
ends up where it's going to go anyway. It's just you're not getting paid for it.
That's right. And the banks practice a strategy with the products that they invest, which is that movement of money or that velocity of money that we hear about, that each individual client, whether they're accredited or not, can practice. But you've got to have access to investments where you have control. You've got to have access to investments that earn at least a double-digit rate of return without loss of principal. And that's the type of accredited investment that is available. People need to keep looking until they find it, and I know we're going to talk about them today.
Absolutely. So anyway, if there's any non-accredited investors on here or accredited investors who are thinking that in some way being super conservative with your money is benefiting anyone, you're absolutely right, but it's not benefiting you. It's benefiting the people who are holding your money and paying you the small amount of money. Now, on the flip side, there's a lot of people who think that there's a relationship between risk and return. And there should be, but a lot of times there's not. What accredited investors that know what they're doing look for is they look for an inverse relationship between risk and rate of return. In other words, if we can minimize risk and maximize rate of return so that it's not proportional, so that we're additionally secured or additionally safe with our principal, yet we're earning a rate of return that is much higher than what should be corresponding to on the risk, those are the types of investments that, number one, are usually only seen by accredited investors, and that happens because they never filter down low enough that anybody else can see them anyway, because it is such a good investment that, you know, they get gobbled up quickly. And I think that's really where we want to kind of go with the show today, correct?
Absolutely. And these investments are oftentimes completely out of the realm of people's normal definition of investment. So do you want to dig into one of them?
Sure. We just mentioned one yesterday, which was debentures, or they're basically, you may have heard it called preferred stock, might be another term that a lot of people are familiar with. Again, anybody who follows Warren Buffett knows that when he bailed out a lot of the banks, he took preferred stock. Now, what that means is that he's making a loan, he's getting a guaranteed rate of return, and he has the ability to convert to stock at the stock price when he made the deal. So think about it. You know, a stock could have been trading for $200 a share. The stock market crashes and takes it down to $5 a share. You're loaning money with a guaranteed rate of return that's actually guaranteed by the government, Warren Buffett's case. And at any time, he can exercise his strike price as $5 a share. Now, many of those stocks return to $50 a share, which is still 50% lower than that they were trading. But from 5 to 50 is what rate of return on your money?
Oh, let's take a look. It's not 45. And most people think it is 45, yes?
Yes.
So 5 to 50 is a 900% rate of return on your money, a 900% increase.
So would anybody think that they were getting ripped off if they got a 900% increase on their rate of their money?
I don't think so.
So anyway, these are the types of deals that I'm starting to look at now. I don't know how many of them have a 900% rate of return, but I know that the ones that I've seen have, you know, anywhere from 6, 8, 10% guaranteed rate of return. They have a stock price, that same thing. The stock price the day that the money was put in is the locked-in price. They can be exercised at any time. And if the investment is high enough, sometimes there's even additional features built in. Like if you put in $500,000, you can get 150% shares or 125% shares. So in addition to getting it at the lower price, you actually can buy more stock than you actually put money in for. So again, it's a way that you absolutely can almost have your cake and eat it too, because you're saying, look, I want to be secured, which you're secured by whatever assets that are being put up on the deal that are owned by the company. Most of the time, these deals are done around real estate, so there's usually some type of a real estate portfolio involved. You're getting a guaranteed rate of return. There's a guaranteed time, like 5 years, 7 years, or whatever, where you can just get your interest, walk away, and be done. But you also have this window of opportunity that says, you know what, I like your business plan, which is something that most investors never get to talk about. Is what is it that you're trying to do? You know, what are you trying to do with this company, or what is the purpose that you're doing, you know, that your company exists for? We just have to hope that the management of the company has the shareholders in mind instead of the executive compensation, which a lot of times eats up most of everything else. And now you've got a chance of saying 7.5% is a lot better than 1%, and if you do what you say, we're all going to make a lot of money together. So it puts everybody on the same side of the table. I like that too.
Absolutely. We always like to look for win-wins, and they're hard to find. It's one of the reasons that we like the life settlements and the bridge loans to other alternative investments or accredited investments that we work with. Now, Todd, if you have somebody interested in what you're talking about, is there access to that? Is there contact info? How do people get a hold of what you're talking about?
Probably the best thing with this, just to use the number on the website, and if you want to have a quick call with me and just tell me, you know, what it is you're looking to do, I can give you a referral to a place that would be able to do that. What I didn't realize is that, you know, in terms of bridge loans now in the commercial construction world, there really are no banks lending in that area right now. So most of the commercial projects like apartment complexes and office parks and things like that, they're all being done in a process similar to this as well. So there's quite a few of these investments out there if you know where to look.
Absolutely. And the bridge loan environment, I think, is very fun for people because a lot of people out there are busy professionals, especially those that meet the accredited definition, and they want to have real estate, but they don't have the time to get it themselves. And so a bridge loan is literally where the investor is the lender, and they lend money to somebody that owns and buys and refurbishes and manages and leases out real estate. And so this is not real estate as in somebody's primary residence. It's like you said, it's a commercial building, it's a strip center, it's a whole bunch of rental homes, it's investment real estate. And the investor or the lender can easily get between 12 and even upwards to 18% per year on their money. Their money is often returned to them in the form of an interest payment every month and then a principal repayment at the time of that bridge loan finishing. So bridge loans, like the term implies, are often done between the purchase of the property and the refinance of the property after the property's been rehabbed. So they're typically 6 to 12 to 18 to maybe 24 months, bridging that gap between the one and the other. Very valuable in terms of its interest rate. And yet, if you showed a bridge loan to most financial planners or even financial advisors that try to be holistic, most of them would say, oh my gosh, that's so risky.
Got it. And one of the reasons that they're so risky is that there's very little compensation paid to advisors, if any. So some fee-based advisors can charge you a fee up front to help you find them, but the FTC regulations on compensating people are kind of crazy in this arena, too. So that's another reason why I think you don't hear about a lot of them as well. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, and a lot of advisors are strictly prohibited from referring out or even talking about any investment that their broker-dealer does not support. So you have a lot of supposedly independent advisors that literally cannot talk about bridge loans, life settlements, some of the other alternative investments that are out there because their broker-dealer doesn't sell that particular product. And it's a shame because it's really limiting a lot of people's capability. People are so hungry today for something besides the stock market. And so you'll hear this word accredited, but you'll also hear the word alternative. And oftentimes it means something different than the norm. And yet the typical advisor is going to show you, if you want an alternative investment for real estate as an example, they might show you a REIT. Well, a REIT is still, it's a real estate investment trust, it's still in the stock market. Yes, it may be somewhat connected to real estate, more so than a typical stock or bond, but it's still stock market related. And so it's truly not alternative. If you want alternative, you need to go into something completely different, like the bridge loans or the life settlements or even oil and gas or some of those other things.
One of I've gotten to actually sit and look at two deals that have happened inside one of these alternative investments. And what I did not realize, and maybe you have heard this before, but in the world of commercial real estate that has been foreclosed on, that is in any way guaranteed by the FDIC, by the Fed, by Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Ginnie Mae, whoever, if the government's involved, if an investor makes a cash offer on a commercial property and the bank who owns it verifies funds, they are not allowed to accept or deny the offer. It has to be presented to the Fed for them to make the call. So I've watched two properties. One of them was valued at $6 million. It was valued at $4 million. The bank was holding a note of $6 million on this property. They were trying to do a quick sale of like $3 million, and a $1.1 million cash offer was made. They refused to accept it. Because it was cash, they could not refuse to pass it on, and the government accepted it. And that commercial building is opening in St. George next month. I've been invited to the grand opening. The landscaping cost more than the purchase price.
Wow. That is amazing.
And I've watched two deals back to back go down with that, where the banks were absolutely appalled because they didn't want to lose the money, but because it was a cash offer, again, inside of one of these private offerings, so it's a cash offer, buying brand new commercial real estate at 25 cents on the dollar. It's amazing.
Wow. Well, it's what is needed in our world to move forward, and this issue of the government being involved in making this decision is scary because many times those people do not know what they're looking at. And I'm actually grateful. It's good that that one moved forward because a lot of times they won't accept any kind of offer. And there's short sales out there that should have been happening left, right, and center, but the banks weren't accepting the short sale offer. And so the property ends up just languishing even further. And sometimes the banks end up having to accept another short sale offer 6-12 months down the road that's lower than the one that they could have had a year ago. It's just crazy, and we have to get past this. I'm not sure the government being involved is a good thing. It's just, to me, going to slow it down even more.
Well, I can tell you that there's, for whatever reason, the government has an agenda of moving things quickly, and I don't think writing zeros off on their balance sheets matters so much. I can tell you, after having worked in the bank on the real estate side, that, you know, a lot of executive and management compensation is tied to the bottom line, and a lot of these properties will sit on the books indefinitely because they don't want to run the loss through the books for bonus purposes.
Right. It's easier to just sit on them and less expensive, which is just a shame. It's really what will keep our economy in a holding pattern, which is not good. Money needs to be moving. Properties need to be moving. And again, accredited investors can take advantage of that. One of the things that we help our clients with is looking at a real estate deal. And we have a real estate calculator that lets them work through it and actually determine the rate of return that their actual real estate deal would earn. And that's a very difficult thing for people to get their arms around. And in investments, you talk about annual rates of returns. And in real estate deals, people often talk about things like cap rates or monthly cash flow, but that makes it hard to equate a particular real estate deal to other investments. So this calculator enables you to take all the facts about a particular real estate deal and get at the bottom line rate of return that you are getting on a particular piece of property.
That brings up another great, just kind of, I guess, a side note, and that's looking at real estate deals. I mean, there was a place in time where so many people would get involved in real estate deals that did not cash flow, expecting to make their money on the backside in equity. And I've been telling my people lately that there's just no need right now to get into negative cash flow real estate deals because I don't think, first of all, we're in an economy where equity is going to be guaranteed when you cash out. The demand for these rental properties is so high that every deal that I have seen done lately, the rents have actually come in higher than when they anticipated going in on the deal. Are you seeing kind of the same thing?
Yes, absolutely. And we saw this problem in, I want to say, the early 2000s, where people were paying more for a property than they should have been just because they had 1035 money that they wanted to exchange. And it's not a good habit. It's the tax tail or the profit tail wagging the financial dog. And, yeah, some people can win in those. But, again, we've talked about the importance of not losing principal. That's a good way to lose it sometimes.
Yeah, I talked to an investor just this week that was so proud of the way that he was able to set up a self-directed IRA. Great. But he invested self-directed IRA money in negative cash flow real estate.
Ouch. Not good.
Why? You know, you're trying to shield paying taxes on that money. I understand your motivation, but you're losing money, and you could have written off the losses if it wasn't inside your retirement account.
That's right. Yep.
So anyway, I think there's a lot of people who take a little bit of knowledge and kind of stretch it. That's why I think, you know, this idea of getting education, getting knowledge, and that's what we're dedicated to on this show. Not talking about what everybody wants to sell you, but talking about the knowledge to put your own deal together so that you understand what makes sense. That's worth whatever you have to pay to get it.
That's right. And knowledge is something that is actually one of your best investments. And yet, on the same hand as a red flag, if you will, I see people spending $15,000, $20,000 sometimes for training and education on various strategies around real estate or investing or what have you, and then they don't actually do anything with that money or that decision, that knowledge that they get. So you'll want to be careful on that side and work. There's so much information available on the internet and in conversations and things like Blog Talk Radio that can enable you to get the information without spending $5,000 for a weekend with some guru to learn about how to do something. Not that those are bad, not that you can't benefit from those, but I think people need to be careful with that. We've ended up helping some people that had so much credit card debt from all these educational programs that they went to, they couldn't invest any money because they'd gone into debt to get the education, didn't have anything left to actually do things with. So it can be a challenge.
Vision without action is hallucination.
That's good. You come up with that on your own?
Henry Ford.
I love it. Absolutely love it. And I thought of another radio show that we could do to help our clients learn things, and that is about self-directed IRAs, because there's a lot of misunderstanding about how self-directed IRAs work and the trustees around those self-directed IRAs and the various people involved and then the investments that you can do inside self-directed IRAs. By the way, we don't feel that real estate is one of the better ones, just for what it's worth. But the bridge loans and the life settlements are very appropriate for self-directed IRAs. So that
Absolutely.
Can be something that we could work on next week to help people understand a little bit more.
I think that would be a great and I'm continuing to learn about this myself. I sat down with a person who was setting up a Roth 401k. And I had heard of this before, but he was actually able to put $56,000 a year directly into a Roth 401k that will never be taxed. And I thought that was amazing.
Yeah, that's a pretty good deal. It's locked up till 59.5, but you sure got the
Absolutely. And he was in a situation where, asset heavy, just trying to find pockets for all the money. So this was a good thing. And I wasn't aware that it was that powerful a tool. So kind of amazed me. So, all right. Well, we got about 30 seconds. Anything you want to say to wrap up, Kim? Uh-oh. Kim, did we lose you? Okay. I'm not sure whether we're still on. Huh. Okay. All right. Sorry, guys. We're having just a little bit of technical audio difficulties here, but we're at end of the show anyway. So, again, this is No BS Money Guy Todd Strobel with Kim Butler saying thanks, have a great week, and we've got some great ideas for shows, and we'll be talking to you next week. Kim, if you can hear me, thanks so much.